Hello, and welcome to the Creative Arts Business, the show all about the business of working in the arts and entertainment industry in the San Fernando Valley. The Creative Arts Business is a show where you can't have the show without the business. The time is 11 a.m., and I'm your host, Brian Metcalf. My guest host today is Bojesse Christopher. He has worked on as an actor, producer, director, and writer, and also teaches acting classes. He has been in films such as Point Break, both the original and the remake, Tank Girl, Sleepwalkers, and television series such as Ferris Bueller, Married with Children, and Quantum Leap. Bojesse, thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you, Brian, for having me. I appreciate it immensely. I'm excited.
So, when did you know you wanted to start working as an actor?
Oh, wow. You know, I've always grown up really loving television and film. You know, I grew up in the 70s, so like the first films that I grew up going to the theater watching with my mom, who would take me, you know, religiously, was like Rocky. You know, seeing Rocky on the big screen or Saturday Night Fever. I mean, I'm dating myself. You know, I might be speaking to a younger generation, but I think these films stand the test of time and really motivated me to want to sort of put myself, escape into the imaginary circumstance, the what if. And so ever since I was a kid, you know, like 6, 7, 8 years old, Star Wars, you know, the original Star Wars.
Wow. Yeah, that's definitely, I mean, who doesn't love Star Wars, and that's keeping relevant. And even Rocky's been pretty relevant with all the remakes or sequels that they've had, and
absolutely,
the most recent Creed and everything from that as
well.
Yeah,
yeah.
So how did you get your start working in this field?
Well, you know, when I was in high school, I was surfing. I grew up in Northern California in San Francisco, and you know, I needed to find a way, a transition into the creative arts. So for me, modeling became an opportunity in San Francisco. So I started out as a catalog model doing, you know, the Sunday newspaper ads for like Macy's, Mervyn's, JCPenney, that kind of thing. And then I got a couple commercials, and I got into the Screen Actors Guild Union because of a commercial that I did for a theme park in Northern California. And as soon as I was 17 and was graduating high school, I knew that I was going to move down to Hollywood. You know, I had a couple contacts down here, and it was already my plan. So very early on, I kind of had my, you know, my 6 months to a year sort of mapped out. I didn't know how I would connect those dots, but I knew that what those dots were. So very early on, I guess I'm fortunate enough to know what my sense of direction was.
Wow. So yeah. You just up and left by yourself?
Yes.
No relatives coming along with you or
anything? No. I mean, you know, I look back and I wonder how I was able to be so motivated and so confident that I could pack up my car literally with everything, surfboards on top of the roof, clothes inside, with about $2,500 in my pocket and a couple people that I knew down here in the business, not in the business, and just went for it.
Wow, that's great.
The heart wants what the heart wants, Bri.
And what would you consider your first big break?
Well, when I first moved down here, I became friends with David Faustino, who played the character Bud Bundy on Married with Children. And so I used to visit the set almost on a daily level and just really soak up the experience that was working on a sitcom. And I started to meet those folks and become friends with those folks and won their confidence. And they put me on the show as Christina Applegate's recurring boyfriend, Rick. And so that was kind of my first experience working with a live audience and camera. And it really kind of, it got me going in the right direction. And then I think I was at a barbecue or something with David Faustino's friends, and I met my first agent. And when she signed me, one of the first opportunities was the Point Break audition.
That's great.
But it came from actually stealing that audition from my friend Brian Austin Green, who played David Silver on the original 90210 show.
Oh, did he ever forgive you for that?
I would imagine he did, because soon after I won that job and stole that audition from him, he booked the role of David Silver on 90210, so he was fine thereafter.
Wow. Was there a little tension there at first?
There was. I mean, so, you know, the short story, because it's kind of a neat story for those who are original Point Break fans and are interested in sort of how these things come about. You know, I'm a surfer, born and raised, you know, from Northern California. So this audition for Point Break was Brian Austin Green's appointment, and I was running lines with him because he knew that I was a surfer and had this sort of organic thing where I came up in Northern California, and he said, you know, Bojesse, can you kind of coach me informally on, you know, how this guy speaks and kind of the real deal with the surfer kind of vibe, right? Northern California vibe. So I had all these lines memorized, and I drove him to the audition driving his car. And so he's riding shotgun and we're running lines. And by the time we get to the audition, he goes in, does his thing. He comes out. I'm in the waiting room just kind of hanging out. And I've got a beanie and long blonde hair. And I look like that kind of surf kid that grew up in Santa Cruz, because I am and was. And the casting director, Rick Pagano, comes out and he says, "Are you next?" And I said, no, I'm his ride. You know, I'm sitting there with Brian's keys in my pocket. And he goes, "Well, are you an actor?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm an actor." And he goes, "Then you're next." And I could see it on Brian's face. Brian's like, "No, man, no, don't do this. My audition, don't hijack my thing," right? So, of course, I knew all these lines and I see the opportunity and I've got Brian's keys in my pocket. So I know that he's, you know, he's just got to sit and deal with the fact that I'm going to walk in this room. So I go in the room and I stand on a chair and do this monologue that is required of the audition. And the casting director says, "Can you wait 1 second?" He leaves the room. He comes back with the director, Catherine Bigelow, who directed the film. And he says, "Do the same thing you did, but do it for Catherine." This is the director. So I did it again. And I had the job before I walked out of the room.
Wow.
And so that's my big break. That's a long-winded response to your question, but that's the skinny on how I kind of got into the business.
And how was it working with Catherine Bigelow?
Amazing. I mean, you know, female director, which is always an amazing thing, such a strong point of view, such a strong sense of direction, ferociously passionate and giving and caring and creative. You know, it was really a pleasure to work with her. She's still my dear friend to this day. And, you know, she was married to James Cameron, famous filmmaker, obviously, for many films at the time. And Jim Cameron was executive producing Point Break and kind of shepherding the project for Catherine, his wife at the time. So I got to work with this, like, really, you know, premium batch of filmmakers on this first feature experience of mine.
Very intimidating, I assume.
Well, you know what? To be honest with you, I didn't have really a point of reference. You know, I was kind of thrown into the lion's den. And so I didn't think about it much. I just went for the ride, went along for the ride, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
And so what would you say, taking a step back, what would you say was your training to do the acting and what you learned and stuff?
Sure. I mean, you know, prior to that experience, I observed a lot of the friends that I met when I first came to Los Angeles. I had friends on TV, I had friends doing movies, and I would visit their sets all the time, and I would just watch what they would do for camera. I would watch camera setup, so I'd really study what the cast and crew were doing while you know, kind of being privy to the experience without actually interacting. And so by the time I was cast in things such as Point Break, I kind of had a handle on filmmaking aesthetic and sort of geography and the technical and the creative aspects of, you know, finding moments in front of a camera. But certainly I came to LA with a plan to hone in and develop my art. You know, at the core, I'm a craftsman, I'm an artist, I'm an actor, I'm an expressive. And so that was first and foremost, and everything else I knew was a close second, because when my preparation met that opportunity, I won the moment. I found myself in the work, and it was transcendent, and I found growth through those experiences. And certainly Point Break afforded me that from the get-go.
That's amazing. So did you know it was going to be huge before it was finished, or?
Yeah, it was a big production. I mean, at the time, I think it was a $20 million budget, which doesn't sound like much these days, but it's still $20 million, you know? 20th Century Fox, it had a huge cast. Patrick Swayze had the movie Ghost in theaters at the time we were filming this movie. So, Ghost and Patrick Swayze at the time we were filming Point Break, he was the biggest movie star in the world. Ghost was the biggest film in the box office. And I was working with a very young Keanu Reeves, who was just coming off some independent films, had done Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, had done The River's Edge, and maybe a handful of other films. But truly, he was this, like, emerging, not even a movie star kind of guy that everybody was buzzing about. You know, subculturally as an actor, you knew who Keanu Reeves was, but he wasn't a household name then. And I was working with Keanu, and I could feel that, and I could get a sense of he was going to become a huge movie star when this movie rolled out. And then, you know, there was an ensemble that was second to none as well, including James LeGros, John Philbin, Gary Busey, Lori Petty, John C. McGinley. You know, the list goes on and on and on. So it was a wonderful experience.
I bet. And going back, you've already told me about the auditioning process. Is it? Would you say it's different for each film typically that you go through when you're going through auditioning and so forth? Or
yeah, it's I think the conventional way of auditioning is painful because you know actors they want the job, but you walk into a room and every room's a little different depending on the genre or the medium and the casting office and the folks in that room certainly. You know, the actor's job is to go in there and interpret the material, make it their own, and give as much as their real selves to the experience as they can as a professional and kind of fit into a beginning, a middle, and an end and leave something in the room that's memorable and compelling and intriguing. To, you know, is this person right for the role? Do I believe what this person's saying? And can this person take direction? And the rest is politics. So that's a painful thing for an actor because you got to be also, you know, also perfect in, within that box. The way I won Point Break was so unconventional that it was a pleasure, you know. So I think most of the experiences that I've had winning jobs have come from being ready and then the relationships I've had. So when preparation met that opportunity, I won that job. You know, I've had my share of auditions and winning jobs, but I think most of the game changers came from what I just said, you know, being ready. And then obviously, you know, shaking hands and kissing babies, relationships, you know.
That's great. And so what do you do when you go and you prepare for a role?
Oh, wow. I mean, my basic preparation, depending on what it is, you know, obviously you kind of have to really get inside the world of the play. But for me, once I read this thing and get a feel for the imaginary circumstance, really kind of, you know, open myself up to what the writer intended, and I can visualize the world of the play and see myself inside the world of the play. I ask myself, who am I? You know, I mean, I have information on the page, certainly, but I think one of the most important things is to really, really kind of drill in who I am. And once I have an answer for that, explore the deepest meaningful connection as to who I am. And there's an emotional response to that, and that's mine. That allows me to really, you know, take ownership and have a real feeling and a strong point of view about who I am within the given imaginary circumstance. And from there, I can ask myself, what do I want? What does the writer intend me to want? But also, how do I connect to that? And what pulls at my heart to want it so badly that it's worth living or dying for? And that'll give me a feeling, an overall feeling, and that'll support a strong point of view. And from there, I can build choices about the other people that I interact with. How do I feel about the other people and why? And then the rest of it sort of falls into place in the moment as the cameras roll. What do I see? What do I feel? I don't wait for the cues. I follow impulses. I pick up on impulses and the want to say these words. From feelings to thoughts to words to actions.
Wow, that's great.
Pretty deep, right?
Yeah, that is pretty deep. Wow. So you've talked about some of the movies that you've enjoyed growing up, but who are some of the actor influences that you had and what about them specifically influenced you?
Oh, man, there's so many, so many greats. I mean, when I was a young, you know, when I was a teenager, mm-hmm. River Phoenix was the one guy that I identified with the most. Matt Dillon, Robert Downey Jr., Johnny Depp. I mean, all these like heartthrob guys, but they had something different. There was more than just the outside veneer, the good looking, cool, kind of mysterious veneer. There was something going on that I could identify in their heart. You know, there was something that they wanted. They wanted to be able to stand on a box and express themselves, mm-hmm. but they were misunderstood. And it was really interesting. I was very drawn to that. And I felt like I could relate to that. So those guys certainly, in addition to, you know, the pillars of the community, Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, guys like Carl Malden, who probably, you know, your listeners may or may not know, but, you know, Carl Malden, you know, there's who else? Gene Hackman, you know, Harrison Ford. There's so many of the older guys that I look up to in addition to sort of my peer group, but so many. And you know, Meryl Streep, I love Meryl, you know, I mean, got to mention Meryl. I mean, there's so many wonderful actors out there.
That's great. And what would you, now you've also gone into directing and producing and writing your own projects as well. Can you talk about that for a little bit?
Sure. You know, I think for me, filmmaking, and you can relate to this, I think filmmaking was one of those mediums that I didn't want to sit back and just feel like a one-trick pony because I felt like I had a lot to say. I mean, my job as an actor is to interpret someone else's writing, make it my own, show up, and do my job to interpret that in a meaningful way. As a filmmaker, as a writer, director, producer, you really get to kind of force the creative energy onto a situation. You don't sit and wait for it to come to you. I can go after it. I can create every day. I can wake up every day and I can write, or I can shoot something on an iPhone or a camera, or I can, you know, hustle and produce elements that get me closer to doing that. And I love that, because it's like going to the art store, buying a canvas, you know, picking out some paints and sitting down in front of that experience and painting the moment with truth. You have control over that. And so that's really inspired me to tell stories based on my own life's experiences and or whatever I've observed and feel connected to, in a way that I can tap that and find out more about that and how I can contribute to whatever that message is. And so I love that medium.
And you also teach an acting class as well, from my understanding.
I do.
And so could you tell us a little bit about your acting class and the styles and techniques that you teach and stuff from there?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Yeah, so about 5 years ago, I got really reconnected to the art form, the craft of acting. And I got into this Meisner technique, which is known as repetition. And that opened me up to the experience of wanting to share the way I was reconnecting with my emotional self to other people.
I'm sorry, can you explain to us what you mean by repetition?
Sure.
To the people who don't know acting.
So repetition is an exercise, and basically it's a human connectivity thing. It's what do you see, what do you feel? Don't wait for the impulse, or don't wait for the cue, pick up on the impulse. The layman's terms is, the more you can take in about the other person, the more you can leave yourself alone and live truthfully, moment to moment. So in layman's terms, for every second I'm in an observation of you is a second I'm not in my head thinking about what to say and do. So you're taking the focus out of your head and putting it into your heart. You're picking up on the impulse of something real and you're connecting to it. You're tapping each other's feelings. And because you have a feeling and you're connected to one another, now the feeling gives you the want to say the words. So it's a beautiful thing. Instead of wearing a mask of words and waiting for an impulse, you say A, I say B, and I wait for my turn. Now we're communicating through feelings. We're tapping something deep and meaningful. So it's a beautiful exercise. So anyway, so I put this into a format that I call a collective. And I got all my friends together initially about 5 years ago, and I call it Truth Be Told. It's a Stanislavski Meisner Acting Collective. It's not an acting class. Categorically, I say I don't teach acting. I coach truth, because I'm after moment-to-moment truth. Get to know your emotional self so you can put your emotional self into the work, from feelings to thoughts to words to actions. And it's Stanislavski's preparation of building a character leading up to the moment, with Meisner's repetition exercise in the moment. And if I may, so Stanislavski's philosophy was the actor should not imitate or impersonate, that we should become the part by working on the link between the role and the reality of our own lives and emotions.
That's great. Yeah. So if you had a person who came into your acting class and had never done an acting class before, knew nothing about it, knew nothing about filmmaking really, how would you start them off?
Well, I mean, I really want to break people down in a way that they can speak to their instrument. In other words, give me one adjective to describe your emotional self. You know, it's like a truth where you start being honest with who you are as a person. You start using the way you feel to be able to have access inside, so you can take those feelings from that instrument, your heart, who you are, and assign those feelings to the strong, smart, emotionally connected choices you've made in the world of the play. So it really is about getting to know yourself first and not thinking about it, but feeling. So don't think, feel, because when we think, right, we disconnect. We kind of retract backwards up into the head, and we're not living in the forward feel in the moment. So we're missing the opportunity to connect to one another and communicate through feelings moment to moment. So I say, don't think, just feel. Trust your feel mechanism. And once we can get to that point with an individual, it doesn't matter what level you're at. You're just being honest. You're being truthful. You're connected. You're clear. You're open. You're available. You're vulnerable to feelings, the good, the bad, or the otherwise. You're honest and you're raw, and that's beautiful. Now you have it all at your fingertips, because you're in that moment and you can paint the moment with beautiful truth, whatever that is. And from there, then we apply the imaginary circumstance.
That's great.
So it's kind of self-work. It's a journey into self-discovery first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
And people sometimes are afraid of that. But here's the thing. When you're ready to do the deep, good, and meaningful work on yourself so you can affect the world around you as a result, then you come see me.
That's great. So let's talk about how do you keep yourself relevant? And because there are a gazillion actors out there, you have to compete with a lot of people in the business right now. How do you keep yourself relevant these days? And
yeah, well, that's a great question because I think we're all sort of, you know, distracted by that kind of thing. I try not to write the music that everybody else wants to hear. I write the music that I want to sing. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like my audience will find me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's things that I feel maybe I have to explore and do because I have to be on a radar. But I don't feel like I have to go in one lane just to achieve a level of followers or likes. I don't. That doesn't fire me up. You know, for me, I just want to be true to myself. So here's what I do to stay relevant, Brian. I work on myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I stay true to myself. Every day I get up and I say, what do I want to do with myself in this life, in this day? How can I matter and where do I start to be proud of myself so when I'm gone, people can reflect, my kids can look up and say, you know, what did my father do in his lifetime? And I just want it to mean something. So in terms of relevant, I just want to be relevant to myself and my audience will find me.
And how do you get that audience to find you? For example, how do you get yourself out there to casting directors, to directors and producers? How do you get your name out there to everybody?
Well, I mean, you know, I work all the conventional social media platforms, certainly. I mean, I love all that stuff, you know. I'm down with all that stuff, you know. It's a lot of fun. But, you know, I kind of stick to the traditional way of doing things. You know, I've got an agent, I've got a manager, and, you know, I trust and rely and I'm confident on their expertise to do what they need to do to solicit me. So all I really feel like I should be doing is working on my craft and working on myself. And then staying on top of my representatives so I know that they're creating the opportunity for me to do what I'm trained to do. And above and beyond that, you know, if I can find opportunities to convert my resources into opportunities myself, then certainly I'm looking to do that, which, you know, relationships are everything. But again, I think these days, because everything's on social media, it's hard to have that personal sort of relationship with folks. So I think going old school, traditional, picking up the phone, calling somebody, seeing somebody, sitting down with somebody for 15 minutes and having coffee or whatever, makes a bigger, deeper impact on the relationship than, say, texting someone, hey, I see that you're casting a film. Can I get in on that? You know, I'd rather show up and you know, ask that person out for coffee or something, you know, because it means more to me and it means more to them. And I think it converts into something game changing as a result. So I don't know, man. I'm traditional.
Do you ever get scripts that you don't want to do that your agent's pushing on you that you're like, I'm not feeling it right now? Or
well, yeah, I mean, I suppose once in a while, but to be honest with you, I feel like every opportunity that is put in front of me, whether it's an audition that I want or, you know, can't connect to, is a challenge, is a personal challenge, and it's an opportunity for me to sit down and figure out how to connect to it and go in and do my job to present it. And, you know, if I get that job, better to have that job than not to have that job. I go in there and I do the best I can, regardless of the outcome of the movie or the television show or the independent thing or whatever it is. I'm very supportive of the creative arts, and I'm also appreciative of any opportunity that presents itself. If it sends a counterproductive, counterintuitive message, contrary to the way I believe in life, then I might say not for me. But other than that, man, you know, let's paint, let's do it.
What are you working on these days?
Well, I've got a film coming out next week called All Nighter, starring J.K. Simmons and Emil Hirsch, and I appear in the film, and it's a dark comedy. And that film, I believe, opens next Thursday in L.A., and then I believe March 24th in theaters in all the major cities. It's got a limited release in cities, but it opens in LA next week. In addition to that, I'm just kind of coaching and really into that, and it's pilot season, so I'm auditioning and just, you know, I'm just living life, man, having a good time.
It definitely sounds like it. And what advice would you give to aspiring actors?
Follow your heart. I mean, do what feels right and go after it like it's life or death, because it is. You know, if you want this, then explore it, but commit to it 100%. And whatever that means for you, you know, don't let anybody tell you it's too difficult, because everything is too difficult. It's hyper-competitive, right? Life. But if you want to be an actor because whatever the because is for you, then go after it, but don't go after it half speed. Go after it with 110% commitment, because it is competitive, and you have to prove to yourself and others that this is who you are, what you want, and what you do. And it will come. Maybe it doesn't come overnight, but eventually, because the heart wants what the heart wants, it will stick to you, man. Write the music that you want to sing. Your audience will find you.
And what would you say if you could give yourself advice from 10 years ago or 20 years ago or whatever?
Oh, man. You know, that's a great question, because, you know, I do reflect with folks that I coach a lot about when I was in my teens and my early 20s, about really taking every opportunity, whether it's professional or, you know, if it's workshop, whatever it is, put 100% into it. It's a discipline, it's an art form, it's a business, and it's an opportunity for you to do what you love to do. You know, take it serious, because it may be your last opportunity. So, you know, dig in and give it your all.
Great. And where can we see your work at? I mean, do you have a website that you can tell us to guide us to? Or?
Absolutely. So there's two things. I think bojesse.com, so BOJESSE.com, pretty much is the epicenter of everything Bo Jesse. All my social media platforms and my acting collective is all on that website, bojesse.com. And then the IMDb, the Internet Movie Database, you can find me, Bo Jesse Christopher, BOJESSE Christopher, CHRISTOPHER. Those two things. And what a pleasure it is to talk to you, Brian.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. And thank you very much for being here today and sharing your work with us.
It's my pleasure.
Again,
thank you.
Be able to check his work out. Go to his sites, bojesse.com. And you've been listening to The Creative Arts Business. I'm Brian Metcalf for KPCRadio.com. Thank
All right.
you.